Business Breakfast on Talk Radio with James Max. With The Times. Know your times.
Very good morning to you. It's Monday, the 2nd of December. You're listening to me, James Max, with your Business Breakfast here on Talk Radio. With you till 6.30 when Julia Hartley Brewer will be here. Anyway, joining me live in the studio now is David Selves. He's a business advisor, a financier, property venture capitalist, does all sorts of things. David, very good morning to you.
Good morning, James.
We'll talk a little bit about what you do in due course. However, it is customary on this programme at this time of day to go through the front pages and then to start going through the stories that you've picked out for us. So. The Times leads on spy chiefs on alert for London Bridge copycats. An associate of the London Bridge killer was arrested as security agencies scrambled to stamp out the threat of copycat attacks. And then also they got pictures of the two victims of this appalling terrorist tragedy, which took place on Friday. Saskia Jones, 23, who studied victim protection, and then also Jack Marriott, who's 25, who was leader of the program, which these individuals were involved in. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary.
It's horrendous, yeah.
It is horrendous. And of course, the front page is, of course, dominated by this story. Daily Mail, as Prime Minister reveals, 74 convicted terrorists are back on the streets. Police made first dramatic arrest. They always saw the best in people, tributes to the inspirational victims of the London Bridge terrorist attacks. Is on the front page of The Eye. Those pictures also on the front page of The Metro, killed for caring. Boris Blitz on Free Jihadis begins. Man held in review of 74 terror convicts. I mean, inevitably, this sadly is going to turn political. The Sun, angel stolen by pure evil. Second victim was a volunteer, 23. Pictures, of course, of those two victims on the front page there. Saskia, 23, 25, Jack Marriott. Those pictures also on the front page of the Daily Mirror. Betrayed, they say. Brilliant and kind Saskia Jones was just 23. Was the best of us, but like Jack Marriott, 25, she was murdered by a barbaric terrorist and failed by a cash-strapped, broken justice system. That's what they say. There's going to be an Arctic bubble, which is going to sweep in from Norway, believe it or not. Britain is facing 40 days of snow and ice, with temperatures set to plummet to a bone-chilling minus 14. It's going to bring travel chaos, apparently.
Travel chaos? Well, we've got travel chaos for other reasons starting today.
Have we?
Well, yes, there's a train strike on Southwest Trains.
Oh, yes, of course, yes. Everybody likes a strike, except those who are affected by it, and everybody else. Financial Times, TCI boss calls for fund managers to be fired over emission failures, demand for CO2 transparency, they say. Snappy headline there. The Guardian, PM accused of exploiting deaths in terror attack. Malta's Prime Minister quits in crisis over a reporter's murder. Finally, Malta's PM has gone. And Liam Payne is in G2 today, talking about he was losing the plot, apparently.
Was he? Why was he losing the plot?
Well, I don't know. You've got to read it in the G2.
Right. Oh, I haven't got that in front of me, the G2.
I see.
Right.
Do you like... Were you a One Directioner?
No.
You could care less.
No, anyway. I couldn't. I mean, they were after me. I mean, Beatles, Rolling Stones, that was my... Cliff Richard, that was my generation.
Cliff.
Used to clean his mum's car.
Did you?
Yes.
Wow. As you do.
That's a claim to fame, isn't it?
Of sorts. The Daily Telegraph. Terrorists freed early to be sent back to jail. Full-time GPs, a thing of the past, says new chief doctor. And also the Duke of York is accused of exploiting his trade role, which is the story emanating yesterday from the Mail on Sunday.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, blimey, if that was... You know, that was quite a story.
I mean, this has all really come about because he did the interview. People have started digging, haven't they?
Well, they have started digging because I think the thing is also it must be driven by the Mail on Sunday is clearly being taken to court by Harry and Meghan. And I think they're sort of showing, no, we're the people that you're not going to pay lip service to us.
Yeah.
And I think there's an element of that going on. I think also you're dealing with some very wealthy people behind the scenes who are making decisions about what should and shouldn't go. And when people don't play ball, then they decide to, you know, rattle. And that's sort of what's happening is that I think Prince Andrew's probably been given a long leash and people have kind of left him and the royal family alone.
That's
because
right.
The others were doing, if you like, such a good job. Okay, fine, we'll leave it. But I think...
the Air Miles Andy thing just evaporated and disappeared, didn't it?
They did a particularly good job. He did a really good rebrand job.
Yeah.
And I think he probably would have got away with it. But for the things, every so often, something happens. So there's something with his daughters. There's something with his ex-wife. There's something with a house. There's something with a something that piques people's interest. And then, you know, looks at it, and then somehow they manage to close it all down, probably because they give an interview by one of the others. But this time, I think he's gone a step far. And I think also whoever advised him to do that interview, you know, if you're going to be interviewed by Emily Maitlis and she can ask whatever she likes, you better make sure you've done your homework and got some good answers. And I don't think he rehearsed anything with anyone.
No, it came across as just being turn up, have a chat, walk away, exonerated.
It's partly that, and it's also partly if I speak, because, you know, because my reputation is so high, because I, you know, when I speak, people will listen to me and it'll be fine. And I think what it demonstrated is somebody who's more out of touch than most.
Yes, I mean, it's the opposite of if I speak, everyone will listen.
I think totally, the point is that we did all listen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that we dug a little
bit. We
listened too hard. Retail surge brightens up High Street, says City AM. Anyway, so let's talk about that, because a lot of people are now doing a lot of shopping online. I mean, I've bought things online. I mean, I do like to go into shops and have that sort of retail experience. Having said that, on occasion, I do like to do something online, and it just makes it easier, for I absolutely know what I want.
I think in a lot of things, James, we're just becoming lazy. It's as simple as that.
Is it laziness?
Yes. Well, personally, yes, it is. I've got grandchildren. They are varying ages through to 11. When the eldest was young, I would go to shops, I would buy. Now, I do it online because they send me a link and it's easier, and it's just done. And you know, I've spent 50 years as a serial SME, and I always, whenever possible, support the small man. And I feel guilty every time I click that thing online.
You see, I don't feel guilty about it, because I think if the retailer was doing a better job, because I think that there is a place for small retailers, really like them, and I like the quirky stuff that they find. Yeah. There's a place for the very big retailer that really gets it right. So, for example, there are times when I know that I might be able to get perhaps his TV a little bit cheaper, but in fact, I want it installed. I want somebody to come and do it. I want them to come and fix it.
But you can get all that from your local shop as well. They can install it and they can fix it. And if we talk about things like washing machines, white goods, they'll take the old one away. That's not a problem. No, I think it is laziness. And that, you know, I've been the other side of the wire and fighting for business on a high street. You can't compete. It's not a level playing field. And I'm the last one in the world to moan. My great-grandfather...
Oh, I'm the first.
Ah, well, there, see,
I love a bit of moaning.
We're a good team then. But my great-grandfather, who was a London docker, taught me very much that the hand you've got, young Davy boy, is the best one, so play it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And that's great advice to give a kid.
It is, but then on the other hand, the thing is that I suppose things are changing so fast. What the only concern I have is that I don't mind looking for the cheapest deal, but what annoys me is when the cheapest deal arrives, not because somebody's being a smart retailer or they're really passing you a good deal, it's because the tax system's wrong. And when the tax system is wrong and you think, hang on a second, you've got this independent retailer, they're doing their best, they're trying
their best.
And yet they can't offer lower prices because they've been forced to pay the business rates. They've been forced to pay the rent that they're paying for their shop. They've been forced to pay for whatever else it is. And somebody can just come along, direct you through their Luxembourg SARL link. That means that they're on a lower tax base, and boom, in it comes. You know, it just seems as if we've created this. We've let it happen because we've had our eyes on other things.
Yes. As simple as that. All those things you talk about, and whether we can't develop some of those issues because we're in an election. But all those things you talk about, like particularly business rates, are a nightmare.
I think whoever comes to power, though, is going to have to sort out that mess, because I think it's become such a boil that needs to be lanced. The noise will be too big, and although it's a good cash cow, tax speaking,
and of course the money goes to central government, not local government,
correct?
From business rates, which a lot of people don't appreciate.
And so, as a result of that, it means that I think a lot of people are going to be very concerned, if you like, to make sure that it is resolved, because otherwise we're going to see even more jobs go and even more high streets.
It needs a complete root and branch review.
It does. I mean, I've been saying for some while on this show, it is a tax that is not fit for purpose. And it's not fit for purpose because it was designed for a bygone age. It didn't work then. And it certainly doesn't work now.
There's a number of towns have something called a bid, which is a voluntary tax if enough people in the business community vote for it. But they differentiate in the charge between the large employers, businesses, and the small. And there's got to be some reappraisal of the whole situation.
But I think there should be, in the sense also that I would like to see a return to individuals with, say, three or fewer shops. So say, for example, if you've got three branches, it's perhaps a family or whatever it is, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, when you start to see a retail chain, I think that's a very different proposition. I don't mind them, but I think that we've become absolutely dominated by the retail chains, that every high street is identikit. We all know now that the high street that survives is the one that has diversity, that one has little individual shops. It is more difficult for them to survive and to get things going. And it does take a different kind of dedication because of the way that they're staffed and the way that they're owned, yeah, and the way that they perhaps provide a living for the individuals. So I think we've got to encourage that change.
But strangely enough, I see the advance of the internet as possibly bringing back the traditional high street. When I was a kid, I rode a grocer's delivery bike. Today we have these huge out-of-town supermarkets. I don't know why anybody in their right mind carries home tins of baked beans, soap powder, all the heavy stuff.
I have never done an online supermarket order.
Now that I do often.
You see, I've never done that for the very simple reason that for the last 20 plus years, I'd lived where I've got a supermarket right at the end of my street. And I work on the basis, if I can't carry it, I shouldn't buy it.
Shouldn't buy it.
That having been said, that's all going to change as we're moving. So the online retail shop could very soon happen. Because yeah, why do you drive off, take a car, fill your car with stuff and then come back and unload?
Exactly. But I understand people wanting to choose their meat, their fish, their cheese, all the nicer, smaller things.
But also not from a supermarket.
Well, we'll see, I think, a reversal then to, and we're talking 20, 25 years, but we'll see a reversal to the quality shops in the high street.
I want to see a bigger, I know they've already started because you can get it through Milk and More. I like a milk bottle as opposed to a milk plastic. And I
That's one of the stories I've chosen this morning.
I know. I'm very excited about it. We're going to be talking about that later. We're also going to be talking about what Mark Carney's going to do after he leaves the Bank of England. Oh, I bet you'll be excited. I think this will raise a few hackles. Anyway, you are listening to The Business Breakfast with me, James Max, here on Talk Radio, where we are, of course, powered by The Times. Know your times. Time now, 6:15.
Talk Radio. News headlines.
I'm Jenny Barsby. Good morning. The online lender Zopa is close to agreeing £130 million in funding as it races to salvage its plans to become a bank. The company is one of Britain's biggest peer-to-peer lenders, and it's understood to be in advanced talks to sell a majority stake to the British arm of the American private investment firm IAG Capital. Nick Varney, the chief exec of Merlin Entertainments, has warned of a slowdown in continental Europe affecting his company's theme parks. The world's biggest catering group, Compass, the owners of B&Q, Kingfisher and Britvic, have all issued similar warnings. And according to research by Stirling University, online calculators that tell people their life expectancy may be having the perverse effect of discouraging them from choosing an annuity. A study has found they made unexpected decisions when confronted with the inevitability of death.
Business Breakfast on Talk Radio with James Max. With The Times. Politics tamed.
And a very good morning to you. Coming up to 17 minutes past 6 o'clock in the studio with me is David Selves, who's a financier, property venture capitalist, business advisor, broadcaster, interviewer, all sorts of things. A polymath, no less. David, very good morning.
Good morning again, James.
So, thank you for joining us this morning. Just before we get back to the stories that you've picked out from this morning's papers, just talk a little bit about some of the things that you've been up to. So, a lot of people will hear the words venture capitalist and they'll wonder, what on earth does that mean? Does it mean that, you know, you're some kind of a reckless investor? Or what does it mean?
Well, one hopes not, but sometimes it can look that way. Venture capital is about taking risk, and risk actually creates jobs. You look at projects, the words do have an unpleasant connotation, which is unjustified most of the time.
But we seem to have lost in this nation. So if you are a venture capitalist, it kind of means that you go into projects which are riskier, projects where your capital may or may not come back to you, or you may have to do an awful lot of work to make that capital perform.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't seem to understand that money costs money. So if, for example, you have money, in order to put it out, if you like, into an investment, into something, the further you got the risk spectrum, the more return you would like to see from it. A lot of people don't seem to understand that you need to get a return on your money, even just to stay still. So say, for example, if you've got £100, if you want your £100 to be worth £100 next year on the basis that inflation is running at, say, 2%, that means that you've got to have £102 next year. So what are you going to do with your money? If you bury it in a soft, you know, under a soft mound of earth for a year and say, oh, it's safe. It's not. It's actually worth less than it was last year. So that's why money has to be deployed. That's why it has to work. That's why keeping it in notes and coins is not necessarily advisable. And that's why we do have investors who are out there who and sometimes they'll take their money and they'll take enormous risk with their capital. And they might get none of it back.
And indeed, they will lose from time to time. And I interviewed...
That hurts.
It does. I interviewed at the London Grill Club 2 years ago, John Moulton, who is, I think I described him as the grandfather of venture capitalists, and probably most famous for the deal he never did, which was British Leyland, which resulted in BMW buying it and taking over the Mini and all the rest of it. But yes, you do lose sometimes. But I mean, I go back, I left school at 15, we're going to touch on a story in a moment about the fact I can't read properly. I go back to being a kid and taking risks, making pennies and tuppences and threepences under 10 years old. You know you're going to lose sometimes.
But that's the point, which is that in a portfolio, and this is why sometimes people say, why there are investors who are going in the high tech and investing in companies that don't make any money and doesn't make any sense. If that was your only investment, it doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
If, however, 95% of your investments are tucked in things that are going to give you 5, 6, 7%, to take a few percentage of your investment portfolio and go, you know what, I'm just going to put it on black or red. And if that comes in, then your overall performance, woof, up it goes.
Yeah, but we mustn't overlook the fact that in doing that, you are creating jobs. We've been through some terrible job times in this country.
We have, but at the moment it's looking pretty
strong. It's the other way around.
Now, let's go back to the stories in the papers from you. So, Zopa. So, it's said to be on the cusp of agreeing £130 million cash injection that could help meet its regulatory capital requirements. There's been a huge pressure on these peer-to-peer lending companies. It seems to have gone very much out of favour.
Well, it's certainly calmed down. I think that's partly because there have been some losses, haven't there? And people running out of money. But they are a key part of the new economy. They're here to stay. I go back in time through my checkered career. I was a bank manager. And I remember when I could sit across the desk from you and I had a limit I could lend. And then my boss would have had a limit, and he usually gave me the wink to work within his, and then we could put a paper to head office and have an answer in 2 days. I bet there's not a listener out there recognises that. The thing about these peer-to-peer lenders, and I've used them, is that you fill your form in, you send it back, and back they come with an in-principle offer, which is not just based on credit scoring, it's based on a bit more. Coming back then, James, to where we were, which I suspect is why you led us there about venture capitalists, you then start getting these lists through of people lending you a pound, people lending you £10, and suddenly you find you've got your 100,000. But nobody has taken any great chunk. One of the developments in that in recent years has been that you start to see in those lists other funds. And so somebody's actually gone and taken 25% of what you're looking for. But that then is broken down in between another 100, 200, 300 people.
So it also demonstrates, if you like, this sort of new move to just generally reduce risk and try and offset it. Because
yes.
I think what technology manages to do is it manages to dissipate. And of course, it becomes tremendously complex in terms of where all the money goes, which is why these aggregator sites are so important. Either aggregators for bringing money in or aggregators for sorting out deals. Because then it means that you've kind of got a sort of central focal point. This is why their business models are so effective. But yes, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Zopa and see whether they do get that money. Now, let's talk about Mark Carney. So, he's...
Carney's in the Telegraph new business, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he absolutely is. So, Bank of England boss. So, he's stepping down from that role. And indeed, it's after an eight-year tenure, he's going to be stepping down at the end of January. Well, he's gone and got himself a new job.
Well, I think the insight to this probably happened in April. I had a little discussion with some Extinction Rebellion characters in Parliament Square, and said, look, you're drinking beer out of a single-use plastic glass. You've got water in a single-use plastic bottle. There's plastic all over your signs and things. You're disrupting London. On the day, the governor of the Bank of England has got his French counterpart to co-sign a letter to 27 central banks saying we must look at the environment and climate in the same way that we look at finance. That is our duty.
But
as a central bank.
But isn't the reason, well, one of the reasons that they did that, because we were seeing all these protests? So
yes, and this, James, becomes the great point, and you can look back through history. The protesters have got our attention. They've got the governor of the Bank of England on side. And so I think it's perhaps time they stopped campaigning for us to listen and threw their weight behind finding out what the answers are and helping us implement it.
Possibly, but
Mark,
you see,
Carney going to do that job, I think, indicates that he's genuine.
Possibly, but I get very concerned that we confuse our climate argument. Because there are two sides to this. The first side to the climate argument is pollution. So when you talk about single-use plastics and all these sort of things, that's nothing really to do with CO2. It's to do purely with pollution. We've got pollution and mess and rubbish and waste.
Yes.
And all of these things that I don't think that if we really cared about it, we would have a national plan. And the national plan would say how local authorities are to use the stuff. We would have a national plan that then turned into this is what we're going to reuse and this is how we're going to make money from it. And this is how we're going to sort out your waste.
No, I agree. And we
don't have that.
I agree completely. And one of the problems, if you go to your local tip, who will have a very high percentage of recycling, it's because they've got lots of different bins to put it into. So it breaks down into every component.
But also
it
allows you to just manage the waste more easily. Because when you've got something where... You only get your waste collected every 2 weeks. You have all this stuff stored up and you just think, oh, just get it out my house.
But different councils have different recycling criteria. And different things mix with different things.
My council that I will sadly be leaving, they do two collections a week.
Right.
And they give you the bags to put stuff in. So it tells you on the bag what you can put in there. It's great.
And you do it religiously?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. I think if things are made easy, you do it. Anyway, let's turn our attention quickly to another few stories that you've picked out for us. This is just under the headline, No Bottle, they say.
Oh, this is great. Yeah.
So, this is just talking about early morning doorstep milk delivery systems.
Well, one of my jobs as a kid, I used to help the milkman in his electric float.
Yeah.
In
his electric float, and he was giving you glass bottles that you washed and you gave
and
back.
You washed, okay, they probably sterilized them as well afterwards, but you washed them and gave them back on the doorstep. And of course, there's the Ernie, who was the record Ernie? I've forgotten. Was it Benny Hill?
Yes, it was Benny Hill.
Talking about Ernie the milkman, that it is far better. And I was walking down the street the other day in Kent. And saw outside, I don't know, walked past 100 houses. I saw outside a dozen houses, milk bottles on the doorstep. It is coming back and it is good. But this story is about not being able to find anybody to do the work.
Exactly. They're saying that they're offering £24,000 a year as the annual salary. And they're saying we can't get people. I mean, I think the answer to that is that maybe they need to offer a little bit more.
Yeah, but there's a lot of jobs out there that don't pay $24,000 a year. But even if they do offer a little bit more, have we talking about shopping online and things, have we moved into a different world? Where when I was a kid, people wanted to be the milkman. They were proud to be the milkman. The milkman knew everybody. He was part of our street. Has that gone? Is it?
Yes, I think.
So how do we get it back?
Well, I think it's partly through having things like this and encouraging people to recycle and also maybe having little fridges or something so that you can have it delivered. Because part of the problem with the whole milk deliveries is if you're not there, then it can be sat on your doorstep all day.
But that was the case. And we didn't even have fridges when I first knew a milkman.
Well, that's another story for another day. Very quickly and finally, Making Capital is the headline in the in today's Daily Mail.
Yeah, let's just turn that one up. I mean, this attracted my attention. Hang on, I haven't got the story here.
No.
Because, let's do it from memory. Because I am a very proud Londoner, and I think it is, I'm biased, obviously, but the greatest city in the world. We have always been open to everybody. And just look at the way immigrants for centuries have arrived in London. Originally East London, which is dear to me, but that would be because of the water. They contribute to society, they become successful, they disperse around the country. But this story is about the fact that London is not controlled by the royalty, it's not controlled by government, it's controlled by the people. And that is my London.
I think that's a very good point. Well made. David, thank you very much indeed for coming in this morning and for joining me. If people want to find out more about you and what you do, where do they go?
Oh, they put my name, David Selves, into Google, and they go to several websites, which will include the London Grill Club, where I'm grilling Richard Tice tomorrow, as you know.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm sure you will enjoy that. Give you an opportunity as to, ask him. I'll give you some questions to ask afterwards.
Oh, I think the audience have already given a lot.
I think they probably have. David, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, James.
For that and for joining us this morning here on Talk Radio, where, of course, it's breakfast time very shortly. And Julia Hartley-Brewer is here. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Nice weekend.
Lovely.